This is
Make It Kind.
M.I.P.
with Masamela Matfumo.
Mark Thompson.
Make It Kind.
Get woke.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Did you know that in Ohio, the state Supreme Court could just ignore the Reproductive Rights Amendment we passed last year?
But so many Ohioans voted for it.
That's why we need to keep extremists out of the court by voting for Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that.
Here's the trick. Just remember, don't stop fighting. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes. If you supported Issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue.
God bless you, ladies and gentlemen. We are 12 days away, 12 short days away from Election Day. Lord have mercy. So this is it. Ooh-wee.
It's happening. It's happening.
Another Thursday Coast. Marcos is here with us to tell us all about it from his perspective. Founder of DailyCoast.com, the largest online progressive community, and founder of Civics with a Q polling firm. We'll see if we can get some, if we can get him to reveal some numbers for us. Marcos, welcome back. How are you today?
Doing great. I'm doing great, Mark. How are you doing? It's been a couple of weeks. You've been busy.
Yes, yes. Yeah, I've been busy. Yes, for sure. It's been a lot happening. I'll be hitting the trail myself this weekend, knocking on some doors in North Carolina, much needed. Nice. Mm-hmm. So we will, in person, I'm doing in-person door knocking in North Carolina. So looking forward to that. But I'm going to start this way. Have you noticed, today's Thursday, folks, have you noticed how all the headlines, Kamala Harris calls Trump fascist, as if that happened in a vacuum, as if John Kelly did not do a whole interview recorded, okay, consensually, as if he did not do a whole interview on Donald Trump being a fascist. Now it's become she's saying it as if that just came out of nowhere. Anderson Cooper asked her that last night at the town hall in reaction to the John Kelly story. You see how that is? The mainstreamers, man, a mutual friend of ours said earlier, Marcos, that some of these mainstream media, they're hedging their bets all the time. You know, they don't want to, one minute, you know, they'll run a John Kelly story, but the next minute, oh, she said it as if they didn't plant that seed. So they can, no matter who wins, they've still got access.
Yeah, I mean, it could be that. I actually think it's a little even more boring than that. I think there's this notion that in the political media that basically is the news is whatever the candidates say is the news, right? So that's why they go to her like, you know, he just accused you of being this and this and this. And it's always this reactive idea as opposed to like what's driving the news, what's driving the issues. Can we explore what Donald Trump is all about? So if she doesn't say Donald Trump is a fascist, doesn't matter if John Kelly says it or 34 of 36 Trump cabinet secretaries say it. They don't seem to be able to do that. And it's a game that Republicans play very well, right? You see this like at the debate, right? Everything's framed in a response to whatever Donald Trump is accusing you of. For whatever reason, we don't play that game because we think, I don't know, just you kind of expect better of the media. It's like, look what's happening over there. may be covering that. But unless she says, hey, look at what's happening over there, the media won't cover it. And it's unfortunate. It's just another sign of how broken that media is. But if the candidate doesn't say it, then for whatever reason, they don't think it's news. And there needs to be an absolute reckoning in how the political media covers campaigns. So I don't think it's a matter of access. I think it's just a matter of, like, it's safety. They're not accused of being liberal media if they're just reporting on what Kamala Harris says. But God forbid they say all these Trump officials, ex-Trump officials who know him best, who work with him, who were in a room with him, who saw his dictatorial impulses in action, covering that would be liberal. And I think that's part of the problem. And it's, you know, Republicans have done such a good job of working the refs, but also Democrats need to play that game. And it's kind of unfortunate that we're now playing this game 2 weeks out from the election, because you know what? None of that John Kelly stuff is new. None of that is new.
That's right.
We knew that 2 years ago.
And now it's revelatory. Well, what else do they have that they like that they've not put out there? And why did it take them this late to put that out there? We knew it.
I mean, for example, there's this model who says that Jeffrey Epstein and Donald Trump groped her, or, you know, 20 years ago, or that's the kind of story that in a sane world, the media would dig into. I don't know if it's true or not, right? There's always a chance that it's not true, but that's what investigative reporting is all about. Kamala Harris won't touch that with a 10-foot pole for all the obvious incorrect reasons. If the tables reversed, you know, Donald Trump would be all over that, right?
Yeah.
Because they do this all the time, all these whistleblowers, you know, and then Donald Trump talks about them, and then they go to Harris and like, well, Donald Trump is accusing you of XYZ. What do you have to say about it? And you see this over and over again, like this accusation that CBS 60 Minutes somehow violated some, literally Trump says it's illegal for them to edit Harris's 60 Minutes interview, which is the thing that every journalists in the history of the world has ever done in any interview. And then today we find out that, of course, Fox News has been editing their other coverage of Donald Trump. And it's not a bad thing. That's what media organizations are supposed to do. Now, you can argue they're doing it deceptively, and they are, but right. It's not illegal. It's not wrong in any sort of legal way. But, you know, Trump's going to sit there and pretend. And then, of course, they're like, well, you know, Kamala Harris, you know, Donald Trump says that 60 Minutes at such and such and such. That's the problem, right? They're always, they feel they're in safe territory if they're only asking people to respond to what the other candidate said, instead of actually digging into the candidates, getting a good sense of that, and educating the readers about what that means. And quite frankly, voting for Donald Trump, there was no upside for anybody, right? He's a dictator wannabe. He said it. We're not even have to be hyperbolic about it. He actually bragged about how he's going to be dictator on day one. You have every indication from the conservative Wall Street Journal to 30 Nobel laureates in economics saying that Donald Trump's economic policies will be an absolute disaster for the country, to the point of potentially leading to a depression. Talking about, you know, 100% tariffs. It would be inflationary. It would be disastrous, calamitous for our economy. But no, we're going to talk about his McDonald's stunt, because that's what he wants the media to talk about. And they're sitting there like little puppy dogs falling after him, you know, doing whatever he wants to do. There are real things at stake.
And that's another thing. The media won't even scrutinize a McDonald's stunt. It was staged. There were actors. He was not literally in a McDonald's that was actually open for business at that hour, functioning. These were all paid actors who came through the drive-thru. Everybody else was given the day off. The McDonald's was closed to the public.
Yes, the workers were not there. They were paid actors.
Yes.
Or volunteers. There was a Fox News story about how surprised a customer was when she saw Donald Trump at the drive-thru window. They actually pretended that this thing was a real thing, and it was treated as such. So there are real feelings. And, you know, campaigns have done stunts for the, you know, time immemorial. That's fine, right? Do your stunt. Get your social media clips for your, you know, Donald Trump's Truth Social, whatever, right? Like that's the thing you do. You go to diners and you shake hands and you do whatever.
Right.
Don't pretend it's real and don't actually have that be the A1 story when you have Nobel laureates and the Wall Street Journal. We're not talking MSNBC, we're not talking Rachel Maddow. The Wall Street Journal, the conservatives at the Wall Street Journal are screaming their heads off about the danger that Trump's policies present to the nation's economy. And that's either ignored or it's a one-day story. And if it's a one-day story, it's in page A20, or it's a 20-second clip on the news. The media is treating this like it's freaking fantasy football.
Yeah. It's crazy. So now let me ask you this. What about, you've written a few pieces this week I want to key in on. First of all, undecided voters.
Yes.
And that's still a frontier that she's got to pull in. Is that still, first of all, as you all know, you all have listened to Marcos and me over the years, we probably have a little bit of disdain for undecideds and independents because we don't even know how that is possible right at this hour. But let's get the benefit of the doubt for the moment. Where are we on undecided voters? What are the factors? And is that still doable?
Yeah. So I just want to make a distinction. Undecided independent voters are two separate things.
Okay.
The independent voter are people who don't want to state a partisan preference. But the reality is that the vast majority of them actually do have a partisan preference.
Right.
They may be liberals who hate the Democratic Party because they sell out, right? But they're still going to vote for Democrats if they vote. And the same thing on the conservative side. There are independent Republicans who are like Tea Party people or whatever, who like, the Republicans are rhinos. They're all, they don't represent me, but they're still going to vote conservative, right? So that the independent is not a thing that really exists in practice. Undecided voters are really, at this point, are people who are not very engaged politically. And yeah, they may fall into that small subset of independents that are truly independent, but not independent in the sense that I vote for the best person. Even though they may say that to make themselves feel better, it just means that they're ignorant on politics. I'm not saying that they're bad people. They may be brilliant physicists for all we know, right? But they just don't pay attention to politics. It's not important to them. And so right now in the polling, it's clear that we're down to about 3% undecided, which is a historical low. Usually undecideds hover around 5 to 6%. So we got about half that. So already we are at an election where the electorate is highly polarized and have long ago decided. That 3% may not vote because they, by definition, are not very plugged in electorally. And they're not going to do something that makes them go out of their way to have to do it, right? So what we do know about them is that late breakers, people who decided a month ago who to vote for, we've seen this in several polls, have swung for Donald Trump. His people were locked in. They were locked in 8 years ago, right? You know, like it's not, what was different is that obviously Kamala Harris burst into the scene in, what was it, July, June or July. Yeah. So it's still electorally, politically, very, very, it's only been a couple, July, August, September. It's been 4 months. That's not a long time in the scheme of electoral politics. So what we're finding is that people who are making their decisions within the last month are overwhelmingly Kamala Harris, to the tune of 60, 65% of them are opting. That 3% that is left are heavy Democratic constituencies. So if we can get them to vote, great. If not, Harris consistently has enough of a lead in the swing states that she should win the election. Not big leads. We're talking 1-2%, right? 1 to 2 points. And the same thing in the states that she's losing, like North Carolina losing, I put in quotes, because some polls show her winning.
Right.
But in the aggregate, she's down about 1% in North Carolina. She's down about 1% in Georgia. Those are margins that can be made up by GOTV. That means all of you guys doing door knocking, phone calls, writing postcards, you're doing God's work. That's how we're going to win those states. But there's another factor, Mark, there's sort of two pieces. One is that a lot of the low propensity voters that are still not likely to vote, but the campaigns were working very hard at turning them out, are young voters. And there is we know that there's a big gender gap between women and Democrats, men and Republicans, amongst the entire electorate. It is most pronounced amongst young voters. So young women are heavily, heavily, like 70% Democratic. Young men are about 60-40 Republican. It is an absolutely, I don't know how they're dating these days, like, because they are on different planets, these young kids. And now the thing is, those young women are highly motivated to vote. Those young men are the worst performing voting demographic. So when you hear Donald Trump's campaign, and you see this a lot, they're talking about their low propensity voters. And they have Charlie Kirk, whose job at Turning Point USA, whose job is to turn out low propensity voters. What they are talking about is young men. And Mark, we're going to be talking about these young men for a long time, because they are a vanguard of a fascist right. These are the Andrew Tate fans, all these young podcasters, these sort of fascist young podcasters, people who listen to Tucker Carlson. They're going to be a problem politically for a while. They're also violent. They are dangerous. And we're seeing this not just in the U.S. We're seeing this all across the world, you know, in Eastern Europe. When you look at the neo-Nazi movement in Germany, it's young men. In Poland, there's a fascist right, young men. And there is a global, as women have risen and have taken their rightful place in society, in the economy, in making decisions, men are feeling, quote, alienated. And these young men are the sort of societal reaction to the rise of the women's movement globally, in the U.S. and globally. So this is going to be a challenge that we're going to have for a long, long, long time. But right now, electorally, as we're talking about these next 2 weeks, they are who Republicans need to turn out. And I was actually laughing, because there was somebody looked at, I forgot what campus. There was some campus in Georgia. And they looked at 5 sororities. And in all 5 of these sororities, more than 5 people had voted in those houses. Then they looked at the all the fraternities on campus, and not a single one had 5 men who had voted out of their fraternities, right? So you can see this already as a major, major factor. Like, again, I like where we stand. I would rather be us than them. Women are far more likely to vote. In the early vote, it's not even close, Mark. Women are absolutely swamping men in the early vote. And we've talked about the early vote. I don't want to overly emphasize the early vote, but it does give us clues about what's happening. And what we're seeing in the early vote, again, is that women are far more motivated to be engaged and to turn out. I believe that that the numbers are not going to be as close as we're seeing in the polling. That's where I am. That assumes we're all working our asses off, because we have to. We don't want a close election. The close election may be one of the worst case scenarios, because they're going to try to steal it. We need wide victory margins. I don't think, and there's lots of reasons. One of them is, I think pollsters are hurting. It's called hurting, right? So everybody says, yeah, it's toss-ups in a toss-up state. If you blow the call, it looks bad. If you are where everybody else was, in the middle, just saying it's a coin flip, yeah, nobody's going to knock you for that. So I don't think it's going to be as close as the polling is going to be. I think Kamala Harris is going to win. I think Democrats are being too doom and gloom because it's what we do. But we can't just win narrowly. We have to win big. And I think that's what we need to be fighting towards. And everybody should be knocking on doors and making phone calls or writing postcards, doing whatever you can to make sure that you are personally responsible for getting 10 people to the polls that otherwise might not have gone. Think of it that way. We win big.
Yeah, we must. Now, you've also written about the Arab American vote. And I think you give a sobering, but there's a comment that came in from No Other Name on YouTube. So glad to find this. I'm a veteran who is dealing with election anxiety. A lot of people are. And so No Other Name, we understand that. I hope this helps. Let me just say one thing. Marcos mentioned the early turnout, and Marcos has been keeping me sober on that because a lot of us aren't sure whether those are voters in addition to Tuesday, November 5th, or whether that eats into the margin Tuesday, November 5th. I do know the campaign is calling those early voters a firewall. So their belief is, that's the terminology they use, their belief is that those voters will be just that when it comes to Tuesday, November 5th. Let's hope so. So thank you, No Other Name. I hope that helps you with your anxiety. Don't get me wrong.
I will say we have more reason. The fact that they're not as anxious as we are betrays the reality that they have nothing to lose if we win. If Democrats win, the economy does better, more people have jobs, people have rights. They get to cry about Dr. Seuss books and try to ban books and try to talk about stuff that doesn't matter. Because they have nothing personally at stake in the election. We do. We have our rights. We have our democracy. Our jobs. Everything is at stake if Republicans win. So we have a lot more to lose than they do. And so that's why we are more anxious. Otherwise, if they actually cared, if they actually believed what they think about what they say, about, oh, she's a communist. If they believe that, they would be a lot more freaked out. But they don't believe that.
Speaking of that point, I was going to go to Arab Americans, but before we do that, she did, Univision or Telemundo, one of them. But amongst the Latino population, and you shared some polling numbers with them as well, how real, and No Other Name also just shared with us, it helps so much. I already voted for VP Harris. Thank you. No Other Name. It is, how much does this socialist characteristic being tied to her, does that, do you think, impact the Latino population? Because what they're saying us is that so many immigrants are escaping from socialist countries, so to speak, or so-called would-be communist countries, and that's their anxiety toward her. Is that a real thing?
I mean, it's something that you can exacerbate in communities that already have that, which are basically the Cuban, Venezuelan, Nicaraguan communities in Miami. So they're gonna do that. None of those communities are in electorally significant states right now, because when you're looking at where the Latinos are big, it's Nevada and it's Arizona this election cycle. The ones that matter in the presidential race, and those are mostly Mexican and Central Americans. So it's a different vibe. Obviously, like all these immigrant communities are not monolithic. They all have their own experiences and political leanings. And so what we're seeing in the good data is there may be a slippage of 2-3 points, maybe 4 points. But here's the thing, is that slippage is among young Latinos. It's not the older ones. It's the same dynamic that's driving young white men and young black men too, Mark. You probably know this as well, right? We're seeing that in the data. It's not huge shift, but it's there. And the thing about that is that, as I just mentioned, young men are the least likely to turn out, and young black men and young Latinos are even less likely to turn out than young white men, which are already not very likely to turn out. So if that's the slippage we're seeing in the data, and from digging into it, that's where we're seeing slippage is young white men. I'm not overly worried about them because they're probably the least likely to turn out. And their numbers are, quite frankly, it's a point here, a point there. If she loses because she lost a point or two among young Latinos, young black men, she lost for bigger reasons than that, right? There's bigger macro issues. And really what it comes down to is white people and more. It's that who is going to decide this election fundamentally. So, and quite frankly, young white women, because white men, they're kind of a bit of a lost cause right now for all these, you know, for lots of reasons. White women, on the other hand, they should know better. And
right, it's up to them.
Yeah, it really
is. If white women decide, it's over.
And I've shared this data point a million times on the show, and I always will share it again because it just blows my mind. Is that unmarried women are you know, right now they're about a 63-35% Democratic constituency, like huge.
Mm-hmm.
Married women are 55-45 Republican. 55-45 Republican. And it doesn't matter if it's an unmarried young woman or a divorcee or a elderly widower. Does not matter. When they get married, they become immediately about 30 to 40 points more Republican. And then if they get unmarried, they go back to being as Democratic as a young unmarried woman. And that is either because men are dominating and tell them what to do, or whether they feel more economically secure when they're in a marriage, and then they feel more exposed and more dependent on government resources if they're single. There's no data to this. These are my guesses, but that's why there's this whole movement. You know, women are putting up little stickies in bathrooms saying you don't have to, your husband doesn't have to know who you voted for. Like there's a whole movement to try to get women to, they can lie to their husband. Yeah, I voted for Trump, but then vote the right way. Because that's going to be the key. It's really, so I feel uncomfortable when everybody puts things on the black vote or the Latino vote. White women, it's on you. You got to get your own house in order.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
I'm so sorry I'm late. I was just talking to my sister about protecting abortion rights.
Wait, didn't we already do that in Ohio? We passed issue 1 last year.
I know, by a wide margin too. But now it's up to our state Supreme Court to decide whether they enforce it or ignore it.
Ignore it? Will they really do that?
They will if we don't keep extremists out of the court. But we can protect our rights by electing Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that. Listen, I can barely remember what I had for breakfast this morning.
Here's a trick. All you have to do is remember, don't stop fighting.
Don't stop fighting. Oh, I get it. DSF, Donnelly Stewart Forbes. I love that.
Tell everyone you know, if you supported issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue, a community of women who care about reproductive rights as much as you do.
You mentioned this male piece and white people and racism, but there's also sexism. For example, headline in the New York Times today, the quiet, stubborn aversion to putting a woman in power. We still have an aversion doing that in this country. As many of you know, I'm in seminary. I was meeting with some seminarians from around the world today. And one of them commented to me, and this is something for us to look at. It's too late to look at it and solve it in 12 days. In addition to what you're saying, Marcos, to add to the male aspect of this, there is this attraction now to the strong man that has become some type of international phenomenon, even though even in a lot of these countries, or even in amongst Latino immigrants who are coming from other countries, you had strong men and you're leaving that. And then you're attracted to a strong man in this country. What is that about? I'm not asking you to answer. That's a rhetorical question, but we got to look at that. What is it about the strong, fascist, dictatorial maleness that is so attractive all of a sudden, not just here, but in other places? I mean, if you want to comment on it, but
I'll tell you why. It's everybody talks about Maslow's hierarchy of needs, and you need food, water, shelter. In that, you need security. Security is an absolute need. And you're seeing this in my own home country of El Salvador, where you have a president who has imprisoned 50,000 young men and has taken the country from being one of the most violent peacetime countries in the world to one of the safest in a matter of years. And I was just traveling last year through El Salvador. I was able to go to places I couldn't go before because of gang violence. I mean, it was all narco terrorists. And he did it by essentially eliminating civil liberties and just locking up anybody who might look like a gang member. Definitely locked up all the gang members, but anybody who might look like one. If your neighbor says so-and-so, she's dating gang members, boom, you know, no due process, just lock them up. And I will say that as I travel through the country and I talk to a lot of people, I would ask them, do you know anybody who has been caught up unjustly? Oh yeah, we all know somebody who got, you know, their cousin or brother. They all knew somebody who was directly related to them who had been locked up unjustly in their mind. And then I say, do you support the president? And of course they did. And his approval rating's about 92%. And it's because it went from a place where the violence was untenable to a place where they now can live free of violence. And if you look at the Republican message right now, it is 100% security. Obviously, you have physical security. They're claiming crime is up, and then the border, and they're coming across the border, and it's lawless. So you have crime as security, but they also talk about economic security, which is inflation, and oh, we're gonna slap tariffs on China. We're gonna punish them. That's an economic. I'm gonna protect you from those evil foreigners, and this is a big one: cultural security. So people are feeling, oh, you know, I just saw a story today. Five Republicans and Trump right now are running five times more anti-trans ads than they're running ads on the economy. And that's a cultural thing. It's oh, Kamala Harris said that she wants prisoners to have sex, you know, gender affirming care. So this is the message. It's security and a dictator.
It's hand-armed during his administration, by the way.
And yeah, yeah, of course, of course.
He signed off on that.
It's all bullshit is what it is. But you have Trump basically saying, I'm your daddy. I will protect you from those scary foreigners, from those immigrants, from liberal woke ideology, from criminals. That is, and there are people, and we see this time and time again in history, there are a subset of people that are perpetually scared and really respond to that kind of messaging. So when you have conservatives laughing about liberal safe spaces, they are the ultimate safe space. Daddy, come save me from the scary people. That is who they are. And it is a message that resonates. And this is why I've been critical of a lot of sort of very progressive criminal justice reform stuff, because anything that smacks of you're letting criminals off easy then becomes real easy political fodder for the right to say you're not being kept safe. And people will vote against their interest if it will make them feel safe. And like I said, in El Salvador, people are like, yeah, my brother, he's in jail. He didn't do anything. He's not a gang member. And they still support it because they feel safe.
Well, but here's the other irony in that, though. So The woman in this case, the liberal versus the strong man that keeps you safe, she is actually the one who has prosecuted
And I think that helps her, Mark. I mean, she's doing better than Joe Biden. So I mean, it's hard to see, like, what would it be like if Pete Buttigieg was a nominee? What would it be like if it was, what's his face, Shapiro from Pennsylvania? Like, who knows? Like, those hypotheticals are obviously impossible. But she has been able to negate a big chunk of that tough on crime, which is why I don't think they're really leaning on it right now.
Yeah. Well, we should hope so. Okay, so moving on. Arab Americans.
Yeah.
Would have been your effect? Oh, I'm sorry. I almost forgot. I can't keep jumping around, folks. You shared this information with me. Hold on. In spite of everything we just said, Harris is now seen as better for the economy, up 4 points among Latino voters.
It's all voters, too. I mean, it's...
Yeah. She was -3 in the last wave. Gains among both women and men. So in spite of everything we said, to some Latino voters, she's getting gained. And she'll still get the majority, won't she?
Yeah. She's still at 2/3 of Latinos are going to vote for her. It's a 2-1 margin. And the question is, and you know, the reality, this is where this kind of analysis gets really freaking difficult, because we are depending on the 2020 exit polls to give us sort of a baseline, right? Well, and you know, if you look at the exit polls, I think Biden won Latinos like 63-34, something like that, right? An exit poll is a poll. Exit polls are polls. It's literally a poll. It has a margin of error. And not that, but in 2020, there was no in-person voting. Most of it was done by mail. So you couldn't even sit outside of a polling location and get respondents. So you had to make phone calls. And it's a poll. So if we see, Kamala Harris is running 4 points behind, 4 points behind Joe Biden in 2020. There's a polling error of 2020, and then there's a polling error of whatever poll we're looking at today. It's all in the same freaking general vicinity. And then if we're going to see, like, well, young Latinos are actually trending more Republican, that's even a smaller sample. And not only is it a smaller sample with a bigger margin of error, it's young people, which are impossible to poll anyway amongst any demographic, any group, right? So people sit there and like obsess over this point here, this point there. We actually don't know the exact number in 2020. We don't know the exact numbers in that poll today. And we don't know who's actually going to turn out in 2 weeks to vote. And when we do have exit polls, and I'm going to sit there like everybody else, I'm going to compare the 2024 exit polls with the 2020 exit polls, and I will try to come up with insight. But in the reality, they're polls. They have margins of error. And so people are making too much of this sort of idea of slippage. Honestly, I don't think we're going to see slippage in any electorally significant way. I just don't see it. I see the slippage in young men, for sure. I see that. That's real. But young men don't vote. Yeah. So you can say, yeah, we're losing young men, because we are, but I don't think it's electorally significant this year. It's going to be a problem because they're going to get older and they're going to donate money and they're going to lead organizations and they're going to become more politically active as they get older, like any group, right? We all vote more as we get older. Will it matter this year? I just don't see it. I don't see that sign. And I definitely don't see it in the early vote. And Mark, we can look at the early vote. We can see who's voting. Young people are not voting by big numbers. Young men are barely showing up. It's a blip. So I'm not talking about this just out of like, oh, I'm going to pull it out of my, where. Yeah. It's based on what we're seeing right now. I'm looking for those warning signs. I'm looking for any sign that are supported slipping. Right now, I'm not seeing that. I'm seeing a lot more Republicans voting early, but we knew that was going to happen because they're trying to get people to vote early. It makes sense for a campaign to bank your votes because they may die. You may get a storm that day. You can focus your GOTV operation on getting out your less involved voters and supporters instead of trying to just get out your like people who were going to vote anyway. It's a lot more efficient to bank them early. And Republicans learned that. They learned how they screwed themselves in 2020 and 2022. And so they're banking early votes. And so we're seeing more of that. So there's a lot of like, oh, the Democratic advantage isn't as big as it was in 2020. It was never going to be as big. What I'm doing is I'm looking at who is voting. What are those demographics? What are those characteristics? And what we're seeing is that women are absolutely swamping men. And we're holding our own in racial demographics. But suburban, everywhere we look, suburban counties are off the charts. And suburban counties are ours this year, just like they were the last two cycles.
Got it.
So we see big numbers in the suburbs. We're in good shape.
No other name. Rice has won more. Once more, I can't help but share this one. No, that's not. This is the one. Here we go. White suburban college educated women will show up. Black women educated us.
So, they did.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully they did.
That remains the case. Last but not least, the Arab American vote. And Marcos wrote about this at Daily Coast. He's really had some thoughtful insight on this. This is a group that's no more monolithic than any other.
Yeah. I mean, when I would venture to guess that if most people listening today, if I said, what religion are these Arab Americans? People would be like, they're Muslim, of course, right? Only about a quarter, less than a quarter of American Muslims American Arabs are actually Muslim. Most are Christian, actually. Mm-hmm. And these are people that were basically ethnically cleansed or religiously cleansed from Muslim areas of the Middle East. And they ended up landing on our shores. Jewish people in those countries ended up in Israel, and Christians ended up in the United States. That's sort of where they've historically landed after that sort of religious realignment of the Middle East following World War II. And so you have these communities. So this idea that, oh, well, you have 300,000 Arabs in Michigan and Harris has to do this or that on Gaza in order to get their support. It's not that simple. Just like the Latino community is fragmented and there's Republican leaning Latinos in Florida, the American Arab community is actually quite fragmented. And so I went in through and I looked at some of the issues. And the reality is that only about 20% said that Gaza was their top issue in making their electoral decisions. So what we're seeing is that it's pretty split. It's like 40%, 42% Trump, 40% Kamala. And so Trump's got a slight lead and people are kind of really perplexed about why would Arab Americans vote for Trump, who has promised to deport all of them. And the reality is that a lot of them are very conservative demographic. You have a town in Michigan that is a Arab majority city council. And the first thing that they did is they banned the pride flag. This is a very conservative community. And so it's very complex. And people love to simplify, right? Like, the Arab vote's going to be anti-Trump because he hates him. Oh, they're going to be anti-Kamala because she refuses to call for an arms embargo. Oh, no, it's not that easy. Like, this is complex. There's a lot of fault lines, a lot of religion. They're fighting each other in the Middle East. What makes you think they're going to be like one collective, harmonious, one belief when they get to the United States, when literally we are humans? Like, we're almost built for conflict in a lot of ways. And the ultimate, I mean, if Harris loses Michigan by 5,000-10,000 votes, the Arab vote may be the defining, you know, may be a factor in that. But if she loses Michigan by 10,000 votes, it's because white people, you know, and white women voted for Donald Trump in bigger numbers. It's just the reality. I mean, it's a very small demographically, and I try to figure out how many of them could actually vote in Michigan. I can figure it out. There's between 300,000 and 500,000 Arab Americans in Michigan, depending on the source. It's a heavily immigrant community, so a significant percent of them won't be able to vote. It is an immigrant community, so it's predominantly young, so a lot of them won't be old enough to vote. So once you start whittling down, you're talking about, you know, a couple hundred thousand potential voters, and then you see if it's split 50-50. And again, the polling's national, it's not Michigan. So Michigan Arabs may be different than the national Arabs, just like Florida Latinos are different. It gets freaking complicated, right? But when you look at it, the best case scenario is that you know, the margin may be a couple tenths of thousands of votes. If Harris loses Michigan by that much, it wasn't because the Arab community turned on her. It's because white people love Trump's fascism. I mean, this is bottom line, right?
Yeah.
So we got to maximize the vote where we can. Obviously, it'd be great if all these Arab voters in Michigan voted for Harris. But yeah, I know. Stuff is complicated.
Yeah, it is. As Marco said, folks, it boils down not to any one demographic of color. Again, if white women do what they've been doing every election since Roe, we'll be okay. This is the first time, Lauren. Marco's not touched on this before, because you've had other states that are red where Republican women voted to constitutionalize abortion, constitutionalize Roe in that state. But this is the first time in states where you've got abortion and Trump on the ballot. That's only in two states. Otherwise, you have Kamala Harris on the ballot, which really is a de facto vote for Roe. Let's face it. We're not confused about that. Nobody's confused about that. Yep. So the question becomes, for the first time, you got Roe and Trump on the ballot. And so logic, sanity, reality says, wait a minute. I voted for Roe. I always have. I'm going Roe. Logic says, if I'm going to vote for Roe, I also can't vote for him. Even if you don't vote for her. Even if you leave that blank, you see, even that makes a difference, right? Because if someone is saying, I'm voting to restore Roe by voting for Kamala, in Arizona and Florida, if you leave it blank, that helps, especially in Arizona. But overall, if you're for Roe, logically, you can't be for Trump. That doesn't work. And if you go into the voting booth with that mentality, this is about Roe. Well, how do I get to the voting booth and then flip that over to rationalize voting for Trump?
And
I debated a middle-aged white woman the other day. We were both on treadmills next to each other. She wanted to talk to me. I knew where it was going, but anyway. Mark, Trump's not really against Roe.
Oh, no.
People, man, this social media has really fried our brains, y'all. I said, ma'am, he appointed it, but that's not really what he's for.
He brags about it.
So I'm going to become president and appoint justices that are going to uphold reparations. So y'all can say Mark was never really for reparations. I mean, that just does not compute. Things are not computing. And she argued with me. She got very passionate with me. He's not for that. I'm like, you know, man, I'm gone. Oh, now you want to leave. I see I do. You got that right. I want to leave this treadmill and go back home because this is becoming harassing. But it just does not make sense. And so white women, white Republican women aren't off the hook. Well, are there? I think you said it. There are enough Democratic. But there aren't there enough Democratic women?
Well, but you know what? Those Republican women, that most of them are married. The second they're not married, suddenly they're happy to be Democrats. So they're not off the hook whatsoever, because they are either they're listening to their husbands telling them what to do. They don't need to do that. It's a secret ballot. They can lie to their husbands about who they voted for. So But you only need, Mark, you don't even need a lot of them. 5 to 10%.
Maybe 5 to 10%.
And it's only you had blowout wins in all the battleground states. And then Harris walks away with over 400 electoral votes. And then nothing Trump can do at that point.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Did you know that in Ohio, the state Supreme Court could just ignore the reproductive rights amendment we passed last year?
But so many Ohioans voted for it.
That's why we need to keep extremists out of the court by voting for Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that.
Here's the trick. Just remember, don't stop fighting. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes. If you supported Issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue.
Well, maybe we, after this is over, we just need to do some shows on life. Because first of all, I've never met a woman who I could tell what to do. So I don't know. Have you? Have you ever met a woman, Michael, you could tell what to do?
I live in a place where women are celebrated for being strong and independent. So you spend more time in places like Alabama and Mississippi than I do. But
I've never had that experience. One, so I'm a little puzzled. And then, how do you go if you're not the kind of woman that could be told what to do before you marry a man and become Republican? I don't know how you code switch that. So maybe we'll just do a series of times.
It's supporting your man. It's this idea that you gotta be there for each other. But it seems to always go towards the patriarchy. You gotta support your man. Yeah, nobody says you got to support your wife. No, it's you got to support your man.
Yeah, yeah. Folks, dailycoast.com, civicswithaq.com as well. This is it, y'all. When we talk next week, we'll be less than a week away. Ooh, Lord have mercy. A little later tonight, we're going to try to stream this, so stay tuned on social media. Barack Obama, Bruce Springsteen, and Kamala Harris together. Now, there's a rumor Beyonce is going to do something tomorrow.
Not a rumor. I think it's been confirmed.
Beyonce is confirmed? Okay.
Yeah. And performing. Well, not just
so
talking.
Wait a minute. I thought you were in conversations with Taylor Swift. When is she going to do a show?
I don't know. She'd be great.
Don't you have her number? Can't you text her?
Can you imagine if I could? I would have been doing it already. I would have been like, Mark, why are we talking?
What are we doing? What? You would be talking to me.
I'm busy making plans here.
DailyCoast.com. Marcos, thank you, man. This has been quite an experience, folks. So don't try to, just look, don't have anxiety. Work. Call people. Phone bank. Talk to people. Get them going. When you're in the grocery store, hey, wait, have you voted? Have you early voted? Also, another little trick that they're pulling, let me give everybody a heads up, be prepared. There aren't enough poll workers and poll sites. So a lot of people, my cousin voted in Georgia Monday, and she was in line for 90 minutes. And what happens is some people are taking off from work. So she said a lot of people had to leave to go back to work that day. They couldn't stay. They spent their whole lunch hour standing in line, didn't get to vote. So be prepared for all those things so you're not caught out there. That's not an accident. Either. That's not a rinky-dink. So just be prepared. And I'll tell you something right there, too.
In the exurbs, nobody's waiting 90 minutes to vote out in the exurbs. They make sure they have plenty of voting boxes out there. Yep.
That's right. Marcos, thank you, buddy.
Please appreciate it.
Thanks for getting woke and listening to Make It Plain. As always, perform an act of kindness on behalf of an elder or young person. Write a letter to a sister or brother who just so happens to find her or himself incarcerated. Offer libations to the ancestors upon whose sturdy shoulders we all now stand. And above all, give thanks to the God of your understanding by whatever name you call her and him. All God asks of us is that we give each other love. Thanks for giving MIP love. And please remember to subscribe and give us a 5-star rating. If all hearts and minds are clear, it has been made plain.